This is Bulldog Live on The Pulse. To get in touch about the news of the day, call 866-823-1077. Now, here's Brian Tilton and Bulldog Live.
Right here on The Pulse, but where else, right? At WTPL 1077 and WTPLFM.com. 1-866-823-1077 is our phone number. And Brian at BrianTilton.com is our email address where you can send me stuff as well. Deb, I got your email from our conversation in the last hour. Thanks for sending that along. I'll get a chance to read it later on after the show, perhaps. But, you know, we have quite a few things to get to here on the program today. And as always, there's always too much to talk about. But as always, I like to try to focus on things that you might not have gotten the full story on in reading other conventional news coverage of various issues, and keeping it focused on New Hampshire in particular, as we've been talking about for, what, a year and a half now, the Northern Pass Project, and have seen so many things continue to develop out of the discussion. One of the interesting turn of events that occurred at town meetings last week and the week before has been the focus on a number of ordinances dealing directly with Northern Pass. As we may remember, a year ago, about 30, 31 towns came out in opposition against Northern Pass through an article just stating we're opposed to this. Well, this year, a number of towns took it a step further, and there have been some success stories in that. And Gail Darrell is a New England community organizer for the Community Environmental Defense Fund. She's talked about these rights-based ordinances on the show before, and it's good to have a follow-up discussion on it as to exactly what happened, and contrary to what some newspapers might have led you to believe. So, Gail, good to see you again.
Thanks so much for having me on the show again, Brian. It's great to be with you.
So, overall, not a bad time at town meeting with these ordinances, right?
No, it was pretty successful. The first night of town meeting was on March 13th. And so we had the towns of Easton, New Hampshire, and Sugar Hill, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. The first vote was taken in Easton. All attendees, all voters at that meeting voted to support the rights-based ordinance and enacted that unanimously, a vote of 76 voters there at that night town meeting. Then about an hour later, Sugar Hill, New Hampshire followed suit. And so they adopted the rights-based ordinance by all of their voters, 175 voters unanimously adopting the rights-based ordinance. Mm. And it's not directed at Northern Pass by naming it in the ordinance, certainly. Right. But what it does is it allows the community to decide what kinds of energy they would like to see come in as projects into the community. So it's putting a different frame around that. By really, that's a New Hampshire tradition to let the people decide. So that's what these ordinances do. They let the people decide what sort of energy projects.
It's an attempt to return some local control to the process.
Precisely, because the process now does not allow for any control over this project. This is done at the federal level and the state level. You know, the state issues the permits, and the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, issues some of the bigger permits that are out there.
Which is what I've talked about from the early on in our conversation about Northern Pass. It's really determined by a bunch of unelected bureaucrats, you know, one way or another, because you have in New Hampshire, which would be the Site Evaluation Committee, would have the big say on it and likely the final say. Because I've had this conversation with people out in the streets. They said, well, you know, it's still got to go past the local zoning boards. I said, no, it does not.
No, that's correct.
Not under the current setup.
Yeah, and that's the way the regulatory agencies were set up from the beginning. Way back from the railroad days, the first regulatory agency was the Interstate Commerce Commission. And that was set up for the precise purpose to stabilize profits, right, to eliminate that sort of in-crowd fighting among the railroads, but also to create the illusion that there was some sort of regulation in place to protect people against abuses that would happen with the railroads moving west.
Okay.
So it was absolutely created. And Richard Olney, who was the attorney general at the time, his comment on this was that it would provide a barrier between railroad interests and the public. So there you have it. That's what regulatory agencies do. They set up a process to facilitate the permitting of business and industry.
And, you know, this is where the people are given a chance to speak at one or two public hearings and then you know, the rest is the paperwork that the applicants have before them. And, you know, we know that there's usually a vote taken at the end of that.
And sometimes even, you know, yeah, right.
By those who are hearing it, not vote by the people, key thing here.
It's true. And sometimes, and I've seen it play out in many cases, where the decisions are made before the hearing's held. They let the people vent their frustrations or concerns. But by law, none of those have to be taken into account before the decision is actually made.
And that's the other thing, too. And I've had some people ask me about this just in recent weeks. Do the people that are hearing this proposal have to take into account what people are saying at these public hearings?
Not at all. And my experience through watching many, many hearings, not just in this state, but in Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, you know, no matter where you live, the structure is very much the same. And so you go into the hearing, you're allowed to express, like I said, concerns about the project, but it's by law. It's actually the structure of law allows that decision is made without the consent of the people, which is not what I was taught our government was set up to do.
The people, by the people, and for the people. That's right.
Well,
these rights-based ordinances take us back to. It takes us back to those times.
That's correct. And so it's kind of like, you know, if you compare it with history, we had at the adoption of and ratification of the U.S. Constitution, and I'm talking about, you know, at the time of ratification, way back in history, you had, you know, James Madison and those guys sitting around drafting this document. We had the Federalists, who Madison was a part of, and we had the Anti-Federalists. And the argument was, what form of government do we want? Well, Madison's idea was we needed a government that protected the minority of the opulent against the majority. And so in some ways, here we are again at that same discussion. Do we want to protect the interests of a few people? Those on top, those who are at the regulatory commissions, and corporate owners. So we have, you know, the interests of Northern Pass project proponents. Mm-hmm. We have the interests of the energy policy of the United States. So we have big picture stuff. And who's making that decision? A very few number of people to protect their interest against the vote of the majority. If you look at the vote in New Hampshire, seems to be a little slanted in the other direction, that people are actually opposed to this project.
Which brings me back to my earlier point in this hour, and that is last year, 31 towns came out in opposition to Northern Pass. That number grew this year when people are given a chance to have their say on it. As you mentioned, Sugar Hill and Easton passing the rights-based ordinances. Plymouth did so just last weekend as well.
That's correct, by a vote of 75 to 42. And although there was some sort of impression given at that meeting by the moderator that this was advisory, what does that mean? Was that defined at the meeting, what advisory meant? Because I'm sure the residents of Plymouth went home in a very celebratory mood, thinking, yes, we did it. We have a rights-based ordinance in place, so our concerns and our values as residents of this town will be protected. So we also had, which was interesting to me, Northfield, New Hampshire, and Holderness, New Hampshire, both tabled the rights-based ordinance before discussion.
This is a key point, and I think this is the part that most people who have been following this, even just at a cursory glance, missed that part of it, that it was tabled before it was even debated.
Yes, and so where I live in Barnstead, that is unheard of. We respect the petitioners' voice to come forward to do the work that goes into a petitioned warrant article. It's not easy. You collect signatures, yes, that part's, you know, fairly routine, but you do need to educate those people who are signing that petition on what they're voting for. And so in places everywhere these rights-based ordinances were brought to the vote or brought as petitioned warrant articles, some of them never actually made it to the vote in some ways. But in each town, we had several meetings, and the community group got together and went out and spoke to their neighbors so that they would understand the facts of why these were written, how they were written, what law is, and who it protects, and how these rights-based ordinances would elevate the rights of the community to a level where they could just say, no, thank you, we don't want that here. But in other towns like Northfield and Holderness, the petitioners were not even given the respect of having gone through the process and now to be able to have their voice openly at town meeting among their peers to have a discussion on the warrant article.
See, and that's very unfortunate because we had in our town in Sutton, we had a petition article that came forward to deal with a road that had been closed off. And, you know, it was a flawed article. Everybody realized that. But we gave the folks the chance to make their case. We gave them some constructive criticism, some points, say, hey, you want this to pass? Put a price tag on it, because that's what this article was missing. It stated all the reasons why they should be doing the work, but they didn't have the price tag, so we didn't know what to vote on that. So we said, hey, come back to us next time. We'll think about it. The process played out. There was still a good debate about it, and it was a learning process for everybody involved. You know, and that's unfortunate that didn't happen in Holderness and Northfield.
Well, yeah, the fact that they quashed the effort before they even engaged in a civil discussion was not only unfortunate, to me, that's illegitimate. If you're going to compare that to a town meeting and why town meeting was brought up in the first place in these New England colonies, that's not town meeting. A town meeting is where you go and have a discussion with your peers, you come to an educated decision, and then you stand by it. And in the towns of Northfield and Holderness, they didn't even give the residents the respect of being intelligent enough to consider the options that were on the table.
You know, I have to go back and read some newspaper articles on this, but I think Warner had a similar discussion play out on an unrelated energy, you know, wasn't related to energy, but they had a petition article there too, where, again, it was tabled before it could even be discussed.
That's correct. And the issue there, we have a lot of farmers in Warner, and they're concerned about the trespass of GMO seeds. So those are genetically modified organisms.
Mm-hmm.
Those are seeds that are developed by Monsanto. And so these seeds sometimes drift in the wind and transplant themselves in your field. And you don't want them in your field if you're an organic farmer.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So that's going to corrupt your seed crop. You don't want it there.
Mm-hmm.
So for these people, it was the issue of a food bill of rights, and that was a rights-based ordinance. And the petitioners went, you know, started to walk up to the front of the room, and before they could even make it to the front of the room, someone from the back of the room made a motion to table. It was seconded. All in favor, aye, voted down. And so it felt a little bit, you know, like it was some kind of a conspiracy on someone's part to just dull it before the conversation ever happened.
Now, we can look at what happened with the rights-based ordinance in Lancaster, though, where it was rejected, right? And there were some concerns about this being unenforceable.
That's correct. That's the language that was excuse
go ahead,
me. No That's
problem.
The language that was used. And in Lancaster, there was a big push to chill the discussion and to chill the effort. And I have to say that in Lancaster, the group that presented the ordinance presented factual information that could be backed up by facts, that could be researched and could be acknowledged somewhere that everything that was said during all of those public meetings was true. For the opposition against the ordinance, I'm sorry, but it was fueled by fear, by ignorance, and by lies. And so when you balance those two discussions out, if you're going to mislead the public to vote against something, you might have to face that later. You know, that kind of action will not be tolerated, especially in New Hampshire. For me, New Hampshire is about integrity, certainly integrity of the vote. So I think it's unfortunate that there were so many people in positions, elected positions in Lancaster, that were afraid to come to the table, to have an open discussion, and to really examine the facts. It was based there very much on a fear of private property rights being seized, which made me laugh. Because,
wait
hello,
a minute here.
Hello.
Yeah, what?
So, but it's okay for, you know, Hydro-Quebec and Northeast Utilities to seize your private property.
Yeah, right, know? I know. Well, right. It was up until about 3 weeks ago.
Well, now, remember, if
House
it's
Bill
proven,
648, I know.
True, but if it's proven that the project is necessary for the public good, it can still be taken. There is a process put in place with that new legislation that there will now be a commission established to examine if that property owner was received just compensation for that property taken. But might the property be taken in the future? Yes, regardless of that bill, properties may still be taken.
If they come back and reconstitute themselves in a different economic model, I believe that's how it would have to work
if they were to try that. Right. And also, who's given the authority to decide if that private property will be taken? There are no citizens on that commission.
Of course not. Why would there be? Gail Darrell joining us from the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund here on Bulldog Live. So back on the rights-based ordinances. So back to the drawing board in Lancaster. But that's okay because it gives the proponents of the ordinance in Lancaster more time to educate more people on it so that hopefully at the next town meeting they'll be able to work on it. But again, we've had the successes in Easton, Sugar Hill, and Plymouth. And then we also have other communities that have strengthened their opposition to Northern Pass, maybe not with a rights-based ordinance, but with some other types of ordinances as well.
That's right. There were some regulatory ordinances on the ballot this year also, and those were having to do with burying the lines,
right?
You know, which gives people another option, and that's fine. And I'm really glad to see that the issue is not dead here. People are still paying attention to it. And you will see several more communities come forward next year with these rights-based ordinances. In Lancaster, yes, they'll do it again. Mm-hmm. Those people are convinced that as it stands now, they have no protection, and what they're looking for is some protection.
Now, I can see how the rights-based ordinances would be pretty easy to bring up, at least for a discussion. Having a discussion is the other hand, Holderness and Northfield. How do we do it in a city like Concord, where everything's governed by a city council? How do you do something like that, in either Concord or Franklin, where they have city council form of government?
Right. It's the same process, but it involves getting to the city council members and being able to have an open discussion with them about the law. I think a lot of people don't understand how the law works, and especially regulatory law. And then there's corporate law, and we don't even read those corporate codes or understand how those guys operate. So it's important to examine both, because it's not until you understand where you are legally that you know what options are available.
Mm-hmm.
But in Franklin or Concord, the same setup of a rights-based ordinance can work. And it just involves getting a group of people together who will grab the ears of their city council members and teach them their place in that discussion, also the law that they're up against, be it regulatory law or the constitutional protections that corporations have been allowed to wield to override those decisions that you
Mitt
make
Romney
at the local
corporations
level.
Corporations are people.
Yeah, well, each one of those corporate board members has their constitutional protections as a person. We don't need to protect the wealth as if it's a person. And that's what this corporate privilege thing does. It protects the wealth accumulated from all of the offenses that governments might bring. So if you're saying corporations have the right to the Fifth Amendment Takings Clause. What does that mean in real English? That means if a corporation is permitted to operate in your municipal government, to operate in your town boundaries, that means that if you don't let them site and operate their project, they have the right to claim that you have taken their private property and not paid them. And they have the right to sue you for just compensation under the Fifth Amendment Takings Clause.
Well, that is interesting. And I've mentioned quite a few times the term regulatory capture, which is still another concept that's hard for a lot of people to put their hands around, although I think they can see bits and pieces of it, recent years.
Yes. We call the regulatory system the regulatory fallacy, because you're taught that this regulatory system is set up to protect people and to protect our health, safety, and welfare. Yet when you see things like the fracking that's happening in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm, and the EPA ruling that the waters have been damaged, and then later having this discussion about whether or not fracking was responsible, it's a bit obvious to people who live there that now their water lights on fire from the methane that's present, and before it didn't. So we have this belief system that makes us think that government is out there to protect us. And then we have the reality that shows that sometimes our health is damaged.
And look at the FDA. I just posted this story on my website last night. In 1997, the FDA concluded about the overuse of antibiotics in livestock. It took a court order, 35, 40 years almost to, tell the FDA to enforce its own rules and regulations regarding the use of antibiotics in animal feed. And that's been going on forever, and yet I'm told all the time, well, gee, the FDA's there to protect us. They do a good job of protecting us. No, they're ignoring their own rules.
And that's so much the case.
We saw it with the BP oil spill and the like.
Yes, everywhere. And so what does that mean? That means that we've reached a point in governance where if corporations have more authority than you do where you live, what is happening to our government?
Mm-hmm.
Because it says right in the Declaration of Independence and in our state constitution, government of right originates in the people and operates with its consent. So we're not seeing that play out here. And if our health isn't protected by government and our rights aren't protected by government, we need to do something. What does that look like? For me, it looks like communities getting together to decide on those issues that affect them directly, what they're going to do. Are we going to have factory farms in our community with, as you said, those hormones and all kinds of antibiotics that are in the animals and then passed on into the animal products, and then we consume them, and that harms our health? Is that the kind of paradigm that we're going to have here, this top-down, and we're the sufferers? I would rather see people educate themselves about what they're eating, about what they're drinking, about what they're putting into their bodies, and then make an informed decision.
Right, exactly. So on this point with the rights-based ordinances, it's been used in New Hampshire already, in the case with Nottingham, with the water bottling company. But what about those who still say, this is still a very expensive option because we have to defend ourselves against all kinds of legal costs if this thing passes?
That's really interesting because if you compare the cost of fighting a regulatory battle, which is what Nottingham did, $400,000 to fight through the permitting process to deny the permit, $400,000 in legal fees. Whew. If you look at Bethlehem and they've been fighting that landfill for so long, their prices, I think the cost of legal expenses up there is something like $1 million.
My goodness.
At the time when they spent that money, neither town had a rights-based ordinance in place. In one of our communities in Pennsylvania where they've been having a rights-based ordinance challenged, what are the legal costs? Well, we're a Pennsylvania law firm. That's where we originated. And as a nonprofit public interest law firm, we don't charge for our legal services. So instead of having, to pay us to argue, what is it, $500 an hour for a lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
They pay nothing. Their costs have been something like $39.75 for filing, for copies,
mm-hmm.
for pieces of paper that they needed to run through the copy machine. But if you want to compare legal costs of a constitutional argument to legal costs of a regulatory argument, I think you'll find that a constitutional argument will not be as costly as a regulatory argument in general.
And that's a good point, too, because if people start thinking about where the process of a regulatory argument goes, it goes through all kinds of administrative process, because you have to exhaust your administrative avenues before you can even get into the courtroom. Am I right, or am I oversimplifying it?
No, that's absolutely right. And the permit as itself, that's an administratively granted permit. So what I mean by that is you have your copy of the permit application, and then you have the regulations by how that permit has to be filled out. And if everything is administratively complete there, if, for instance, the president did sign the application, the president of the company.
Mm-hmm.
If you do have a bond that was paid to the town for the correct amount, and if you have done an impact study that's recent enough, to qualify the project, then that permit application is deemed administratively complete, and then there's no discretion. That issues as a matter of right to the corporation. So when people want to find a way to deny a permit, the first thing they look at is the application to see, did the president sign? Is there an impact fee paid?
Right.
So they look at all those details, and they fight each one of them, if there is a flaw there, individually. And so each time they have to, you know, bring it back for an argument.
Yeah, because then they have to give them a chance to correct the application. Oh, I know, and it goes on and on and
yes.
on. So really what we're looking at here is, do you exercise your constitutional rights as citizens, or do you exercise your rights as regulatory, you know, whatevers? And when we talk about the cost of the towns for passing a rights-based ordinance, it's not up to it's not the town that would bear the burden of defending those costs. Your organization, Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, would come and back them up.
Well, you see, in Pennsylvania, that's how it works.
Okay.
And we're not licensed to practice in New Hampshire, so there's a bit of a catch there.
Uh-huh.
But
okay.
For our advice and for providing the legal brief, it would mean that the town would need to come in as our client, and then we would work with their town lawyer, which is the way it should be. Your town lawyer should be on the side of the people and defending the town against any suits, right? That's
right, yes.
You know, theoretically.
Well, you and I think that.
That's
yes.
the way it should work. So what we would offer is we defend all of our rights-based ordinances no matter where they're passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would come in as legal counsel to your legal counsel, because we don't have the license here to file. We can't
right.
file.
Right.
So your legal counsel would be responsible for meeting all the filing dates and doing all that, you know, administrative
sure.
work.
Sure, sure.
And then he would be in communication with our lawyer, Tom Lindsay, as to how to frame the argument.
And he's been in New Hampshire as well lately,
yes.
giving those talks. Well, Gail, I'm pretty much out of time for the segment.
Okay.
Running a little long than I normally should, but that's okay. How do people find out more about the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund?
You can go on our website, which is www.celdf.org. So that's, you know, the Community Environmental mm-hmm. Legal Defense Fund.org.
All right. And if people want to talk to you more about getting involved in their communities, I know I have a lot of listeners in Concord concerned about Northern Pass, others in Canterbury, others in various towns who maybe even Pembroke, people want to look at that. I know they came out in opposition to Northern Pass last year. If there's people there that want to look into this, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, they can email me at GAIL, my first name, mm-hmm. at celdef.org, or they can give me a call if you want my phone number.
Okay.
It's 603-269-8542, and that's my office phone, and they're welcome to call me there.
All right. Very good. And I have that information if anybody should need it afterwards.
Okay.
Gail, thank you. Good to see you again.
All right. Thanks so much,
Brian.
Right.
Thanks for the update.
All right.